We're talking about tech startups here on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kahn. Thanks for being here. In the best of times, one in five new businesses doesn't survive its first year. And an economic crisis creates bigger issues. But tech, it's in a league of its own. Startups are making nasal swabs, clinical testing booths. They're making fever detection systems. Are you trying to launch a new business? Are you moving forward on a business idea that's been percolating for years? What questions do you have about making it as a startup in this pandemic world? We're at 800-642-1234. Attorney Joe Kurgis is co-founder of Generator. It's a venture capital firm with roots in Madison and Milwaukee focused on developing tech startup companies. Joe, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Thanks for having me. It's a pleasure to be here.
Oh, so what kind of world are startups living in right now? What are you telling your clients?
Yeah, we've been sending a guidance at, every Wednesday night to the startups that we work with, over 400 startups, just trying to capture how fast moving it's been in the last 2 months. And it's certainly a distressed time for them. It's for many of them, you know, it's completely taken, you know, years of work and turned it around. But it's also a time where we've seen the amazing resilience of the country's entrepreneurs and just how determined they are to get through the crisis and the pandemic. But it's a time like no other that we've experienced.
Okay, so in these weekly feelers and pushing out information to these hundreds of fledgling companies, what are they telling you? What types of things are they doing to make it right now?
Yeah, I mean, the you know, our lesson learned from this is the game went faster than the rules. And I think what the founders and entrepreneurs across the state have been trying to make sense of just this incredibly fast changing environment. So their need for help, I think, was captured in the CARES Act, which allocated hundreds of billions for entrepreneurs to help them keep their businesses open and to help them make payroll. And for the entrepreneurs we've worked with, just navigating through this process has been its own job of, you know, what's the difference between the economic injury disaster loan and the advance grant and the payroll protection program? And how does that work with the different state programs? And so their message to us has been, help us figure out what's the best way to get access to these resources, to maintain compliance with them. You know, it's been, as the news cycle has changed, a renewal event for them to recommit and determine what's the best way to get through it.
And my guess is you as an advisor is just trying to stay one step ahead of them to make sure that you're providing the best insight and advice you can give.
I mean, as you noted, I'm an attorney by trade and worked at for a federal judge before coming to work at Generator. And I can tell you, it's been hard for me to go through these guidances and these administrative rules and these federal laws and try to make sense of them as a way to present it. You know, if you're in the middle of running a restaurant or a nonprofit, or you're a creative who runs your own business, you know, it's pretty hard to figure out, okay, I've got to do all the things I used to do in this incredibly distressed way. And now I'm going to have to figure out this new set of laws and how to navigate them. So it has, just as new information comes out, you know, last week a loan forgiveness form came out. How do you process all of that? It's been its own event.
So you also work with, like, artists and not just, you know, entrepreneurs in every different facet. Do you see that in the businesses and the startups that you're working with, if they have a particular connection to technology right now or they're tech focused, is that a leg up?
Oh, absolutely. You know, we started our company 8 years ago, and for 4 years, we just worked with tech startups. And then starting 4 years ago, we started expanding. We worked first with Main Street businesses, and then through our partnership in social enterprise with American Family, and then we extended into working with musicians and artists. And, you know, so we've had this wide array of stakeholders that we serve. They're all creative. They all make something from nothing. You know, they just kind of choose a different swim lane. But the tech startups have had a particularly interesting experience. Some of them were actually really well positioned to get through this. There was one of our companies does online grocery delivery for Woodman's. You can imagine that their business picked up significantly when the crisis occurred. Another company of ours, Eat Street, they help small businesses go online and take orders, and they focus on markets like Appleton or Kenosha. And you know, as people started doing carryout and delivery, this service just experienced enormous growth. And so I think that the technology part of our company was well of our state was well suited in some cases, because this advanced, you know, 4 or 5 years of change came in 60 days. Mm. And so for many of them, they're just trying to hire up to keep pace with the change. But that's not uniform. We did a survey of our startups. Over 20% of them had a 25% decrease in revenue. So, you know, this is something that, you know, for many of them, their business has substantially changed. In some cases, it's almost entirely shut down.
Well, as I say, it's really personal. It's really individual. And that's really how business operates.
Yeah, I mean, for any small business owner who's listening to this, you know, this is something they've poured their career into, and something they've poured every ounce of energy, and its well-being is something that goes beyond the financials of the company.
Talking with Joe Kurgis, co-founder of a venture capital firm that helps startups and entrepreneurs, investors find markets and customers. We're talking about how to start a business during the pandemic. And you can join in with your questions. Have you always wanted to create your own business, but you don't know where to start? Are you thinking now is the right time? Join in with your questions, 800-642-1234. You can email ideas@wpr.org. So, Joe, what are some of the different goals or motivations people have for going on their own, for starting a business? Because that is a really big, big proposition.
Yeah, it's great. It's, you know, we meet every year hundreds of new Wisconsin entrepreneurs. Well, I was asking, where'd you come up with this? And it's the most varied places. You know, one of my favorites are someone will come across their own problem and they'll decide that it's incumbent on them to try to build a solution for it. Other people just want to be their own boss and they set off to do it. You know, in services industry, sometimes you're working for a company and you think, I could do this on my own. And you know, you're going to be your own lawyer, you're going to be your own accountant and open up your own shop, your own car repair shop. So it's anything from they have this eureka moment that hey, I've discovered this. I need to take it and have people use it. To I've been working here for 10 years and it's finally my turn to go out and put up my own sign. So it's a pretty wide range, but every time the one common thread is that somebody wants to be a part of something larger than themselves. You know, they want to be a part of creating something that goes from their mind out into the world and people engage and use. It's one of the most aspirational moments and something we can't celebrate enough. And it's done our country a lot of good.
Yeah, certainly American dreams are built upon it. But what are some fears that these budding entrepreneurs have? What do they confide in you about?
Yeah, we've been continuing to run our programs through this crisis, and even in the very short term, I think it's exacerbated some of the traditional or kind of constant fear of, you know, what happens if I fail? Is this the right time to start my business? Is this something that I'm making with enough insight and I have enough of a grasp of what's going on that my assumptions and my beliefs about what people want are accurate? So a lot of the first step that we deal with is people who are trying to overcome their own insecurity or their own fear of the moment. And our rule on this is always don't self-defeat. You know, if you think that you can do this and you think you see this, you know, be intentional and do your best, but don't be afraid to take the first step. But that first step dynamic is almost inevitably the biggest thing holding people back from starting. And I think right now, more than ever in my career, it's a moment that people are really hesitant to move forward because of all the uncertainty and because of all the change.
We're talking about getting businesses off the ground and what it takes during a pandemic. We have attorney Joe Kurgis, our guide. He runs a venture capital firm that's based in Madison and Milwaukee. What fears do you have about starting your own business? Have you written a business plan? How have you changed it with the rise of COVID? What did your banker think of your plan? Are you working through the patent process? How is that going? Let's talk about it. 800-642-1234. We'll be back in a minute with Joe Kurgis right here on the Ideas Network. If you're just joining us, we're talking about what it takes to start a new business during the pandemic. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. So U.S. startups raised about $34 billion in the first quarter of this year. That's according to the National Venture Capital Association. Promising startups that still have cash will have their pick of talent to hire now that U.S. layoffs exceed those during the Great Depression. What questions do you have about finding talent, investors, or developing a supply chain for a new product or service you hope to launch? Let's talk about it. 800-642-1234. Joe Kurgis runs a startup accelerator in Wisconsin, and he stays with us. So, Joe, as we're seeing the numbers and the census data reports that there are applications for employer identification numbers still in the hundreds of thousands through the pandemic, companies are still being formed. Is this the right time to start a business?
Yeah, and going to this discussion, it's so crazy to see the kind of in and out of businesses that are distressed and just trying to make it through, and yet the American spirit saying, we want to try this, we want to keep going. And we see that as an incredibly positive sign that people want to keep moving forward. Obviously, the change in anything from stay-at-home orders to the shift to online to just generally the uncertainty around us makes it difficult to predict what will happen in any individual case. But in the aggregate, we're glad to see these businesses being created. And is it the right time? I think it could go either way. You see this challenge of, is the moment going to be so stressed? And are people's buying patterns so different from where they were that any assumption that's more than a few weeks old, it could be wrong. On the flip side, this might be the best moment you'll ever have to start a business. Just everything is shifting and people are going to be looking to make new decisions. And as a new seller, you may have more people wanting to buy from your restaurant or buy from your service than ever before, in part because the people they bought from a few months ago might not be around, or maybe they've used this as an opportunity to change their buying habits. So, it's hard to say what will happen if you do, but it's also hard to say it isn't a good time to start a new business. So I think every case has to be made, on its own merits and individually, but in the aggregate, we wouldn't look at the moment and say, don't do it. In fact, it might be the moment for a number of businesses to not only start, but thrive.
I would imagine that if someone has been laid off or recently furloughed, that they may even have more time to plan and to think and to say, what if?
Oh, absolutely. That's our hope. We have this wonderful job where every few months we go out and introduce ourselves to all these new would-be entrepreneurs. And you see people who are using a chance like that in their life to say, I've always wanted to do this. And this moment is as much a challenge as it is an opportunity. And I'm going to sit there and commit to the part of me that I never got to commit to before, whether it's my love of cooking or my love of auto repair or my love of technology. I want to get out and build that business. And, again, the country is going to be more excited about supporting entrepreneurs in the next few months than it's ever been. And maybe that wind at your back is the opportunity you've been waiting for.
So you were saying earlier, but just taking that first step is difficult. What is the first steps? What are the early things you do to get your startup off the ground?
Yeah, one of the smartest investors of our time, Paul Graham, who started Accelerator Y Combinator, wrote he wished he could have all of his entrepreneurs on the cover of a magazine. And I've always joked I completely got it because if we could, we would buy the cover. When these entrepreneurs commit emotionally to building the company, it's such an important moment. And when they kind of put themselves out there and say, I'm going to do this, we find that just that emotional engagement, it is enough more than anything else to get them going. And that's the most important. So it's weird sort of deciding for yourself to start and maybe sharing it with your family. But that's actually potentially the most important moment of the company's history. And so just getting going and deciding to do it. Now, from there, our company's perspective has been to work with the entrepreneurs as they've gone through their journey. So a lot of the challenge we found when we started Generator was entrepreneurs would get very siloed help. You'd get some help on a legal entity, and you'd get some help on a website, and you'd get some help on your lease. But you had to self-navigate to each of those silos. And our goal has been to go horizontal with the entrepreneur and kind of say, okay, all right, here's where we think we need to go, and how do we engage with each of those silos? And we see the struggle that entrepreneurs have when they do it on their own you want to be a lawyer, or you want to have your own dry cleaning shop, what have you, but how do you determine the different things beyond dry cleaning and lawyering you need to do? And so our goal with our entrepreneurs is there's resources available, the Marquette Law and Entrepreneurship Clinic or the University of Wisconsin Law and Entrepreneurship Clinic, both good places to reach out to. Our Generator G-Beta programs are free for entrepreneurs. They're anywhere from Beloit to Northeast Wisconsin to Madison and Milwaukee. But there are certainly groups in your community across the state. You know, if nothing else, ask your Chamber of Commerce or ask just the local economic development groups. Hey, I want to start a business. What insights or advice do you have? But you know, it's going to be some help around getting a legal entity, some help around just sort of making sure that you're able to sell and deliver your product. But it's something that they're all bite-sized bites. It's just making sure that you're taking them in the right sequence and getting help along the way, I think, is so important. But it's all building on that first step to try.
Yeah, we're talking with Joe Kurgis. He's our guide. He co-founded a seed accelerator business in Wisconsin to help startups get off the ground. We're looking at what that means during the pandemic, and you can join in. Do you, in your downtime, have you been thinking about perhaps starting a business, or has there been an old business idea percolating in the back of your mind and now you're thinking it may be the right time? What can you say about it, and how is your business plan forming? We're at 800-642-1234. You can email ideas@wpr.org. Joe, as you put together that business plan, and there's some writing going on there, and you're going to have to use that business plan as your guide, what kind of market research goes into that, and how do you put together that business plan?
Yeah, that's a great question. We've had our own model for that, so we're a little distinct in answering it, and I'm happy to answer kind of the traditional way or our way. But our model at Generator has been just take a one sheet of paper. And we have an executive summary where you write down what we call, what it is you do, just in a sentence, describe what you do and make it something that's susceptible to no other interpretation. You know, I'm not an accountant. You're an accountant on the east side who serves this neighborhood. So something that really makes it so you know where people are delivering their service and how. And then we have them profile the team. We have them profile the revenue, who they're selling to, their competitors, and sort of their plans for the next year in one sheet to two sheets. And then we have them from there kind of reverse, we'll have them build out the pieces they need to answer those questions. So if you don't know, what your kind of revenue goals and expense goals are for the year, let's put that in a sheet of paper and put it, if you don't know your competitors, let's put that in another sheet and build it from there. So we build it, with that one sheet to sort of keep it manageable and bite-sized. This executive summary, and then we have them build out the smaller pieces as they're working from it. So it makes it less overwhelming to a new business owner. You're not writing an 80-page document. You're just writing a 2-page document, and then as you need more help to answer some of those prompts, you're able to do it.
It sounds like the business plan has come down in size a bit since I last checked.
Yeah, mercifully, we think we like it. Again, it's a little defensive because we do work in Wisconsin. We'll work with over 40 startups this year and new businesses this year. And, it's a little easier for us to read. We're not reading 800 pages every year. So it's helpful, but it's also important because we encourage our entrepreneurs then to review, treat the business plan like a living document and come back to it every 6 months. And, look at how you thought this would go and how did it go and what does that mean for what you need to do in the next 6 months. But use it as a way to guide you, not so much as a sort of master plan that requires you to follow, but something that you can track how you're doing and edit it and change it. And that has been so helpful for us. What I'll say is our companies have raised, over $500 million of venture capital, and they're all doing it on that two-sheeter.
All right, because I was going to say, if you show that two-sheeter to a banker, they're going to be like, yeah, you go away and do your homework.
Yeah, it's different, right? But it's not to say you'll come back with an Excel spreadsheet. When you come in, you'll have what looks like a business plan. But what we find is when we ask people to write a business plan, oftentimes they're more focused on writing something that's as long as a business plan, and they're not as focused on the substance. Mm. They get the form right, but it's the substance. And by keeping that substance tied to this short central guide, we're able to actually have them build the form in a way that matches the substance.
Well, Joe, let me.
It's a little bit of a trick.
Yeah.
That works.
Joe, let me ask you this. How important is it to know people, to be networked, to know people, to get the capital and your real estate and your talent? Do you have to be networked?
Absolutely. It's it's something I wish was not true. But even you mentioned the $34 billion in venture capital, but, you know, in Wisconsin, only $200 million of that comes here. Minnesota gets almost $1 billion a year. How come we have such wide geographic differences? And a lot of it is because of the quality of the networks in different states. And unfortunately, we see that in different communities. And you'll see this in loans. You'll see it in almost any way that companies are financed, that the network of the community helps that financing. And unfortunately, across the country, a lot of that access, a lot of that network isn't as equitable around race, gender, and geography. And so it is really important. And the flip of that is there are networks to access. You know, if you're in a community and you need help, do reach out and start meeting people, because they, if nothing else, they've been there, they've seen the movie, they know how things go, and they can help you do it much better, much faster, much more efficiently.
Well, we have to pause there. Let's pause there. Attorney Joe Kurgis, our guide to startups, how to launch a business. We're spending the hour with him looking for your calls. Have you always dreamed of being your own boss? Why is now the time for you? 800-642-1234. Back after this news update on the Ideas Network. It's the morning show. I'm Kate Archer Kent, and we are exploring what it takes to get a business off the ground and how the pandemic is complicating matters. It's also opening up opportunities for some. Layoffs have slammed tech companies of all sizes since the start of the pandemic in mid-March. Bloomberg is reporting the industry has cut more than 40,000 jobs. So what do these difficult times spell for your business idea? Do you think now is your moment, or did the pandemic open up a whole new avenue for your startup? Let's talk about it. 800-642-1234. Joe Kurgis co-founded a startup accelerator in 2012 in Wisconsin that's since helped launch dozens of companies, and he stays with us. Let's take a call now. Katie is joining us from Appleton with a question. Hi, Katie.
Hi. I had a question about just an idea I had. It's a really simple product, a baby product. But how do I go about generating investment or really making a business around that product without giving that product away? Obviously, you'd have to explain to people what it is, but isn't there risk involved with that, not having a patent for it?
Yeah, first of all, just narrowing it down just a tiny bit, Katie, is this product consumable?
It's a baby product, so like a baby apparel, basically.
Okay, all right. Joe, any insights there?
Yeah, I mean, especially we've worked with we've even worked with baby apparel companies. I think it's okay in a small network to, you know, with people in the community who are working with, especially with entrepreneurs and people getting going, I think it's okay to talk with them. And, you know, again, I don't know the specifics of your case, but the default is generally you can feel comfortable sharing. You know, I wouldn't share the precise cut and measure of any individual piece of fashion or clothing, but I think it's okay to talk with people about your idea. And, you know, if you're looking around getting a patent or a trademark, I'd really encourage you to reach out to the law school clinics at Marquette and the University of Wisconsin, and they can help you even think through the question you're asking and what laws might be relevant and how to file. But within your small community, within Appleton, we run a program there for entrepreneurs. If you go to generator.com and look up GBeta, you'll see our Appleton program. Feel free to just even schedule a meeting with director there, Adrian, and just say, have coffee with her and say, okay, well, this is or Zoom coffee. This is what I'm thinking about, and it you can be very high level. But in general, I think it's okay to talk and share. You know, it's an interesting question, because at Generator, we don't sign what's called NDAs, where you agree not to talk about something. Mm-hmm. In part because we meet so many people. But in 8 years, we've never had a problem with that. And I've had thousands of meetings with people. And especially at this community level, I think it's okay at least pretty informed discussion to talk about it. Again, just don't share the particular cut and style of what you're doing. But above that, you know, I think you should say, I'm interested in starting a business, and it's in this industry, and this is the type of product I want to sell. And you'll start getting steps 1, 2, and 3 going.
Katie, long have you...
Generator? Oh, I'm sorry, generator.com?
Yeah, we spelled it with an 8, because it's 8's lucky in China, and we figured we'd need all the luck we could get. So G-E-N-E-R-8-T-O-R. But if you go there, and there's tons of other ones, just Google Appleton entrepreneurship, mm-hmm. and you'll see lots of different options of different support orders.
Katie, how long have you been working on this idea?
Actually, I've just started using it after my daughter was born about 10 months ago, because it's like there's a product that's not out there, and it's really helpful. It's like for socks, you know. Mm. They always fall off when they're babies. So I kind of made this thing, and, you know, it's a real simple thing, but it's extraordinarily helpful, and they love it at the daycare, you know. So I was like, oh, this could be helpful for a lot of other people.
Interesting. Katie, thank you so much. Good luck. Joe, when does a business need a patent, and how do you go about getting one?
Yeah, it's a hard process to get a patent. There's things like the patent attorneys, who their job is to help you go through this process. The steps for it are relatively complicated. You know, the U.S. Patent Office, you basically go to their website, and you can download the information or read it online. And you file a what's called a provisional patent, which is sort of a rough draft of what you're doing. And then you're going to have to file a full documented patent. And it's hard, you know, the dynamics of patent law are so nuanced and so complicated that if you try to do it yourself, you know, it's you know, an option, but it's easy to make a mistake because it requires so much knowledge about patent law. And so we always recommend our startups go with an attorney to do that. Unfortunately, that for patent, it often costs tens of thousands of dollars. And it's an area we don't see entrepreneurs getting enough help, because they have to commit so much of their capital just for a patent. And, you know, the trick on the patent is it's sort of a lawsuit in a box. If you get one, you know, the way to protect it is through courts. You know, certainly a deterrent effect, but it's hard for a small company to try to do so. So we tell our companies to get help. You know, go to the Law and Entrepreneurship Clinic if you're on a tight budget, or try to do it yourself at your risk. And again, our advice is to go to an attorney. But if you are going to pursue it through an attorney, just know it does get relatively expensive. But, you know, we've seen startups just go to market and get going. We've seen startups go through the full protection. It's really a spectrum, a range of options that you can choose. And our suggestion is get some advice, get some help, get different perspectives, and then choose for yourself.
We're talking with Joe Kurgis, co-founder of a venture capital firm that helps startups and entrepreneurs find markets and customers and get their businesses growing and going. We're talking about how to start a business during the pandemic. Do you have an idea but are unsure how to reach customers? What questions do you have about finding the right launch for your business and whether it should be online or brick and mortar? Join in at 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. So, Joe, let's look at the digital footprint here for a moment. Can a business these days even do business without a website?
You know, we've seen it, businesses operating without a website. We don't advise it. So it's something that if you Google small business, Google will have resources to get yourself listed even without a website. But we really recommend it, and especially as carry out and take out, or just people operating through phones and Zoom is taking off. It's more important now than ever to do your best to try to get online, just so people can find you.
What are some of the basic elements every business needs on their website?
Definitely the who, what, when, where, and why. So, you know, who are you? What are you doing? Where are you doing it? And really, it, to the extent you can, share what motivates you, because that human element of who you are is really critical for, I think, how people distinguish themselves today. But just making sure you have your address online, you have what you're doing very clearly up front, and anything you can share to sort of make people feel like you're in their community, whether it be a geographic community or a race car community or what have you, anything you can share about yourself and references from customers or press clippings or press stories you might have, anything you can do to help sort of bolster your case that you're the right partner for a would-be customer in narrative and story. But just beyond that, just where you are, who you are, and how they can contact you. And one good test for your initial website is how many, you know, if I want to find you, how many chances do I have to find you? Is it up front? Is it on each page? How hard is it for me to figure out how to contact you and where you are? And the easier it is, the more you have it, the better.
Well, you talk about recommendations and testimonials, and I'm thinking about Yelp and social media. What is the impact of social media and the buzz you generate, in that medium?
Oh, it's terrifyingly important. That's one that's it's scary because it's so far out of your control, and you can just get one bad opinion, and it suddenly years of work can feel like they're unraveling in front of you, which isn't the case. But it's something that I think the more businesses can try to manage, having people leave positive reviews and knowing where their reviews are, and just understanding the existing people's feedback. I think it's worth an hour or two a month. Just take a look at it. But one encouragement we've had for our startups, that if any small business owners are listening, is, if you had five or six happy customers, have you asked them to leave you a good review? And just making sure that you're doing what you can to have people are having a good experience, to make sure that they're getting out and sharing that. Because you might think they know to do it, but if people aren't asked, that generally, the odds of them doing it are much lower. And also, look at your existing reviews, and there's probably constructive feedback there. Some of it's just people who you don't want to listen to. But if somebody's saying something that you think that they're serious, sincere, there's opportunities to improve the business too. So it's the good and the bad. But the number of people who buy off of online reviews is quite large, and I think businesses need to make sure they have a strategy for how to make sure that they're managing it, they're paying attention to it, and they're responding to it.
And responding to it, because you often see when someone has had a difficulty with a product, there is a response from the company. But that takes people power to do that, and you can't catch every one of those bad reviews.
Yeah, when you build a business, I think it feels like running a watch, and you're all the pieces at the same time. That you have to be managing the staff, and managing the online reviews, and managing making sure that the product quality. And I think it could feel overwhelming, and I don't want it to feel that way for people who are thinking of starting a business, because it's also incredibly exhilarating. But you're absolutely right. It's another item on a long list for small business owners to make sure they get right. And I think it tells you why so many small business owners work 5, 6, 7 days a week, 8, 10, 12 hours a day. It's not something that's built into their job. It's something that they need to do for their job.
How do you manage that kind of stress?
A big part of our programs have been mental health and wellness, and making sure that people are trying to take care of themselves, because this, it could kind of swallow you up whole if it gets the chance sometimes, because there's so much to do. You have to be intentional about managing your wellness. You have to make time for exercise. You have to make time for family. And we try to tell our entrepreneurs that's a legitimate part of the business as much as anything else, because if they're burnt out, if they're tired, they're not in the place to do it and do it well. But it's, really good people make this mistake very easily, because they're just responding to, making sure the reviews are done and managed. So
they're chasing that dream. Talking with attorney Joe Kurgis, our guide to business startups. Are you a small business owner with questions about e-commerce or focus groups or a new product launch? Do you have a product that needs a patent? What fears do you have about starting your venture right now? Still time to talk. 800-642-1234. Back in a minute on the Ideas Network. It's the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Technology veterans will point out that some of today's most valuable companies came out of the 2008 financial crisis. Think Airbnb, Dropbox, Uber. And similarly, this global health crisis may produce a new class of giants. Will your startup be one of them? Still time to talk about launching a business in the pandemic. 800-642-1234. We have Joe Kurgis as our guide. He runs a seed accelerator in Wisconsin that's helped dozens of companies get off the ground. Joe, let's look at managing risk for a moment in your startup. Would you ever advise someone, try starting a business in a part-time way at night or in the evenings or weekends?
Absolutely. It's one of the most important steps. And we also, going to that same thread, we encourage people to start with something really, really small, and don't put a lot of money into it, and try to test your assumptions. The startups, the first question with a startup is, can I sell? And the next one is, can I sell it a bunch of times? And so a lot of times when you're on, you know, moonlighting or you're doing it on the side, you can sell it on your own. It might not be but if you do it really small. So if you want to start an Italian restaurant in a neighborhood, why don't you go to the neighborhood and just try making people some meals, even go to their homes if you need to, but just start something on the side if you need to, and get it going with some small steps, and you'll learn a lot. And you'll also start living with your customers pretty soon. And that helps you make really good decisions and helps you manage risk. But do it on the side, do it small. Make sure you're complying with, you know, if your employer requires you to disclose or what have you. But we can't recommend it strongly enough. And I'm glad you asked the question.
Supply chains are super messed up right now in the pandemic. What is your advice for finding product vendors or finding manufacturers in these times?
Yeah, it requires that much more homework. You know, if you need to build something that requires, you know, somebody to help get you a part or to help get a prototype or anything, you're going to have to call a number of would-be partners and see how they're doing. And you absolutely should ask how, you know, do you have the materials that you need to build this on your side? But I'll say this on the flip is it may also be really easy. If you need, you know, commercial office space, there's people who are willing to cut you a good deal. And so some things may be harder to find, and at other times, you know, finding a co-founder or someone to help you may be easier now more than ever, in part because so many people are looking for a new company or a new job.
I would imagine, you know, finding some top talent right now would be easier, but how do you know when it is time to start hiring? How do you go down that road if you haven't hired before?
Yeah, I mean, we tell our founders to go slow and to take their time and make sure, you know, the biggest question with hiring is, do you have the money in the bank and you know, how comfortable this person's committing to work with you, you know, making sure that you can make their payroll for 3 months, 6 months, a year. And so it's really a financial decision more than anything. But then once you believe you have the capability and have the money or you will be earning the money, then the next question is, if you could hire anyone with any profile, who would it be? And is this the right person for that? It's both kind of the quality and quantity and making sure you have the right person and you have the right cash. But it's one of the most important decisions a founder can make. And when they're starting out, ask someone to help on the side. You know, that's a good, you could do that same moonlighting for a potential co-founder or first employee too. So be creative.
Well, we can't go through this whole conversation without thinking about, how do you find a name for your business? What do you call it? How big of a decision is that?
I think it's not as big as people, you know, whenever you start a business, whenever a founder comes to us with a name or they say, well, someone criticized it. I'll say, well, they'll criticize everything, because until you put all of that identity and all of your efforts and your heart and soul into that name, it is just a name. But once you put your identity and put your heart and soul and put all of your best intentions into that, then it changes into something else. So it's definitely something you want to take your time on. And there's no good way to do it. People put it on a piece of paper. People will go around and ask their friends, do whatever model suits you best, but just do it. You know, get a name and anticipate someone will criticize it or think it's silly. And you'll, you know, 6 months in, once you're selling and you've got a cool company, they'll think it's the best name ever. So just get a good one and start rolling.
Well, thank you so much for joining us. We appreciate it.
Oh, my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Attorney Joe Kurgis co-founded the venture capital firm Generator that focuses on tech startups. The latest national numbers on retail sales paint a tough picture for the industry. The U.S. Commerce Department reported a historic 16% drop in sales between March and April. So how are Wisconsin small retailers doing, many of which are starting to reopen? WPR's Rachel Vasquez recently talked to a few to find out.
When Angie Kaminsky knew she had to close her store in March, she started working on a plan B fast.
Oh, boy. So I quickly kind of was trying to think of ways to, you know, keep my business afloat during those times and safe ways that I could still sell inventory.
She runs a small women's consignment store in Superior called Angie's Closet. And for her, doing nothing wasn't an option.
There was no way. I have a mortgage. I have, you know, utilities. I own my building. So I definitely had to do something.
So she started trying curbside pickup, She'd post pictures of outfits on Facebook or Instagram. And when someone wanted to buy something, they had a whole new system.
So I'd just meet them out at the curb and throw it in their car, but set it in their seat. And then I had a little bucket that I would have them put the money in, and I would take that in and sanitize it.
But now Angie's Closet and many other retail stores across the state are slowly reopening to in-person shoppers. And they're facing two new realities: more costs for their businesses to operate safely, and uncertainty about whether they'll get as many customers as they did before.
Well, the biggest thing, I think, is the hand sanitizer, having to provide the hand sanitizer and cleaning products. That adds up. I can see that I'm going to go through a lot of hand sanitizer.
That's Kathy Cooter. She co-owns a set of six small gift shops with her husband on their farm in Cashton, about 30 miles outside of Toma. Each of those six gift shops are separate little buildings that now need hand sanitizer. That's $60. And extra cleaning supplies to wipe each of them down more often.
And as we get busier, hopefully busier, throughout the season, I think it's going to be crucial that I hire an employee to actually help keep the social distancing to where it needs to be, to make sure that there are not too many people in each of the buildings, that sort of thing. And I really cannot afford to hire someone, so I'm not sure how that's all going to play out.
Both Cooter and Kaminsky were able to get some local or federal aid, and they say every little bit helps. But their businesses thrive with foot traffic, and that's especially true of small retailers. Hart Posen is a retail expert at the Wisconsin Business School at UW-Madison, and he says small retail shops rely on those in-person shoppers a lot, in part because many of them don't have big online operations, and setting them up can be expensive.
It costs the same to have that great web presence, whether you've got one physical retail location or 30 physical retail locations.
New survey results from the National Bureau of Economic Research shows that small businesses are some of the most financially fragile, with about 3/4 of the businesses surveyed saying they only had enough cash on hand to cover 2 months of expenses or less. Tessa Conroy specializes in regional economic development at UW-Madison. She says it's a risky time for small businesses.
I definitely think that we're at risk of losing, you know, a number of businesses, including retail. I think it's just a really difficult time period. Consumers are spending, you know, a little less in some areas than they were, or a lot less in some areas than they were.
For now, local retailers are seeing support from loyal customers and their community. Cooter says a local group recently raised money to buy gift certificates from her gift shop and other local businesses. Support Cooter says she's blessed to have that as retailers across the state wait for their customers to come back. Rachel Vasquez, Wisconsin Public Radio.
And stay with us next hour on The Morning Show. Protesters clashed with police in Wisconsin over the weekend following the death of George Floyd, a black man who died in the custody of Minneapolis police. We talk with the police chiefs from Wausau and Green Bay about Floyd's death and the subsequent protests we're seeing and what they could and what they would like to see happen now. Do you think police departments need reforms, or have they been unfairly scrutinized? Are you a police officer? What do you want people to know about your job? Be part of this conversation at 800-642-1234. We'll talk about it with you right after this news update. This is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent, and you're listening to the Ideas Network.